This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
The two-year anniversary of the passage of the Inflation Reduction Act just passed, and here to talk to us about is Darren Bax, Director of Energy and Environment at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Darren, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Darren, I understand that you helped author a letter to members of Congress asking for certain actions to be taken relative to the Inflation Reduction Act, many of which have caused serious downstream problems and implications. I don't remember exactly how many organizations, but it was quite a few talking about these challenges. Tell us what exactly you were addressing.
Yeah, so we had over 50 organizations sign on to a letter focusing on the, I'll put in air quotes, the green subsidies in the Inflation Reduction Act. These subsidies will likely cost over $1 trillion. That's at a minimum. It probably costs a lot more. These subsidies are uncapped. So in other words, the cost could be far greater. It just depends on how many people take up the subsidies. It's not the cost, though, that's just the big issue. It's the fact that the Inflation Reduction Act and through these all this spending is designed to be a centralized plan to change how we generate electricity, so shifting from reliable sources of electricity to unreliable sources. It's a way to try to get people out of cars, gas-powered cars, and into EVs people don't want. It's also trying to get people to stop using gas appliances. It's basically kind of a big central plan to change how we use energy in our country. And it's going to drive up prices. It will undermine reliability in the grid, and we're already seeing that. And, you know, these are some serious problems, and it's just an inappropriate role for the government.
So we know that one of the things that you're talking about is this $7,500 for purchase of electric vehicles as a tax credit. I was reading an article the other day where Ford is retreating off of building a new plant and doing a number of things, new models being provided. And one of the reasons they gave, and I said this from day one, I doubted very seriously that this administration was going to, you know, wholeheartedly embrace the mining of rare earth minerals that are necessary for batteries and creation of batteries. And one of the things Ford said is that we're not going to do our pickup truck, we're not going to do some of the larger vehicles because we cannot buy batteries cheap enough, and we can't get the minerals to even produce the batteries at a cost efficient manner that makes sense for us to be able to market any of these vehicles. Was I wrong then? What's happened now?
No, you're right then, and you're right now. That's certainly part of the problem. I mean, the fact that the government has to provide subsidies to get people to buy something kind of tells you what, you know, it tells you that consumers don't want a particular product. That's why they're giving the subsidies, trying to incentivize people to buy the product and also for manufacturers to produce it. But when you see big manufacturers, they can potentially get all kinds of money, and they're going to get all kinds of money through the IRA, still not being willing to kind of go put all in like the Biden administration may want when it comes to EVs, tells you something. And the reality is just, you know, customers, even with all the subsidies, they're still not buying EVs as the Biden administration may like. There was a slight increase in demand, but it's actually kind of flattened out and starting to go down, which is a big deal given that they're expecting, you know, close to, you know, 2/3 of all new car sales be EVs. We're not even remotely close to that. We're probably at less than 10%. And, you know, the Biden administration is trying to use regulations and the spending through the IRA and in many ways to try to just change how people get around. And, you know, hurting mobility for people is pretty tough, especially for low-income Americans who may find it very difficult to get around and go to doctor's appointments, go to the grocery store, whatever it might be. So there's a lot of trade-offs that the administration and Congress didn't consider.
I was just in the market for a new car, and I stimulated conversation with dealers who I know here locally about EVs. They can't get rid of them. I mean, they're almost giving them away. They'll offer you almost any plan that you can come up with that's fairly reasonable to sell you one of these cars. On the other hand, hybrids can't keep them. You know, they're running off the lot, which gives you an example of where the demand is here. But separate and apart from that, I wanted to ask you a question. The other night, Monday night, President Joe Biden spoke at the Democrat National Convention, and he said that there will be 5,000 charging stations that will be in place in a very short period of time. Not too long ago, we were in the dozens. Where are we on that? Do you know?
Well, I don't know where he's getting that from. we haven't made much progress on that front. There hasn't been, the states play a central role in making the charges possible. And they, you know, states aren't dumb either. They're not going to kind of get involved in something they don't think is going to make a lot of sense. And, you know, a lot of the country is rural, or there's a lot of, it's just difficult to have charging stations kind of in the middle of nowhere. So we're not anywhere near that number, but we'll see how it plays out. But I don't expect that to happen. And one thing about the IRA that I think is important is a lot of the subsidies have not been actually spent yet. And a lot of the programs have not really kicked in yet. So when people try to claim how wonderful the IRA is, well, you can't really say that because, again, nothing has really kicked in. The only thing we do know is it's going to spend all kinds of money, and it's distorting the market, and it's hurting consumers, and it's that's a concern effect. We spend this kind of money, obviously, that has an inflationary effect, not a deflationary effect.
So one of the observations y'all make in the letter to Congress is that what has actually happened is that gas-powered vehicles pricing has gone up because the automobile manufacturers have to figure out a way to recover their losses that they're experiencing because of the EV debacle.
And yeah, you know, it's just
I don't know that people really realize what's actually happening here. I mean, I saw it when I was shopping, and I was told that by folks.
You got to make up for it. I mean, if you're spending a fortune, and you're the companies and you're not selling the EVs and they're languishing on the lots, as you described, which they are, then it's not like it's not going to have an effect on the gas power vehicles because they have to make up for, companies need to make up for their expenses. So it's going to affect you even if you don't buy the EVs. You're going to be affected by the sticker price of the cars, the gas power cars. So any way you look at it, you're getting hit by the IRA, even if you're not taking advantage of, I guess, say, a subsidy. And a lot of Americans aren't because they there's all kinds of other problems with EVs we don't need to get into. But the IRA is so much more than just about the EVs. It's just my biggest concern really is about our grid, making sure that we don't have blackouts and brownouts and people can rely on when they flip on the switch, the electricity will come on and lights will turn on. And my concern is that as we shift away from baseload generation, like in reliable sources like coal and natural gas, and go to intermittent sources like wind and solar, which are not reliable, that we're going to have some serious problems. And the grid experts say already we're going to have problems, yet we're still moving forward in this direction, electrifying things and creating more demand on the grid, while also having less reliable sources to generate electricity to meet that demand.
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty much well established that the grid is antiquated, right? I mean, we have a long way to go to get the grid up to snuff. There was a member of the FERC the other day that came out publicly and said that he's extremely concerned with the status of the grid and, you know, these deadlines on these EVs and what we're doing here, that we want to put more activity on the grid. And he said the grid in many areas of the country is having a difficult time standing up to the demands now, and we can fully expect brownouts and rolling blackouts. I mean, it's almost as if we're staring the obvious in the face and walking right around it in many respects, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, the grid is actually fine, but the problem is that we keep pushing policies that are going to not make it fine, and that is by having policies that move away. You know, when states are getting rid of reliable sources, like shutting down plants, like nuclear plants or coal plants, whatever, that makes no sense, especially when they have operating lives that they can still produce electricity. And then we shift to sources that are about, again, wind and solar, that aren't going to be able to provide the electricity needed. That's when you start to get worried. And a lot of grid experts and grid managers talk about that this, like the EPA rule, Biden administration rule on the power plants, that would effectively kill off coal and make it very difficult for natural gas, too, in the future. You know, they're pointing out this is not a good idea. This is going to create all kinds of strain on the grid. So the truth is, if we just kind of stop trying to move away from and just kind of relied on electricity sources that actually work and reliable and are low cost, we'd be okay. But we're shooting ourselves in the foot right now. States are, through required, like what are called renewable portfolio standards that require renewable energy to be generated, and also now through the Inflation Reduction Act, through trying to again shift away from coal, natural gas to wind and solar. It's going to hurt us.
Is there an example of any of these alternative fuel sources as it relates here in this country? As it relates to success stories, because even when Ørsted the other day announced two major projects they abandoned, they're retreating off of some of the investments that they've made here in the United States for a whole host of reasons, supply chain, all kinds of different reasons, access to transmission corridors and being able to move that power cheaply across that because of the location of some of these wind fields offshore and everything else that goes along with that. But I'm really still waiting for a real live, you know, evidence-based success story. I hadn't seen one yet. Have you?
No, I think, you know, we've been, you know, I think 30 or 40 years ago, they're saying wind and solar is just easy subsidies and, you know, a few years we'll be all set. It just doesn't happen. There's inherent problems with wind and solar, and it's because, you know,
sure,
sun shines only so much, wind blows right, only so much, and then you know, not every area of the country has those types of solar and wind resources, and so that's a problem. But there are renewable sources like hydropower that are effective. And quite honestly, you could argue that in some places, nuclear energy, but I know that some people don't want to think of nuclear as renewable energy, but is certainly that you can't think of a more reliable source of electricity than nuclear. It literally has what's called the highest capacity factor. So it's the most dependable source of electricity is nuclear. So, but then,
I'm guilty of putting both hydro and nuclear in traditional sources because it's been around for decades, right? I mean, you know, hydropower has been around.
I think we get to the point where, you know, the fact that they actually work, we've gotten a grain in our head, oh, they can't be renewable. Is wind and solar have been around for decades as well.
Wind has for certain.
Much more subsidies. They get more subsidies than these other sources. Now, look, I don't think any of them should be getting the subsidies. But what's interesting, and in terms of total dollars, wind and solar get more subsidies. And what's interesting, if you look at it, the subsidies in terms of the actual electricity production, it's not even close. I mean, we're subsidizing these sources so much, yet they're still not delivering for us. And we're going to spend all kinds, like I said, billions and billions of dollars with the Inflation Reduction Act again for these sources, and we're getting nothing out of it. And it makes no sense just logistically and just from an engineering perspective and a technical perspective. We can't rely on wind and solar to meet our electricity demand. I don't think Americans should have to expect and just kind of resign themselves to the fact that we're going to have blackouts and brownouts that's going to be part of our everyday life. That's not what Americans want, and that's not what they deserve. They should have reliable electricity. And, you know, we should be upset about efforts to undermine that.
Have you ever seen a financial model as it relates to wind or solar that actually has an adequate ROI? Because I haven't. I mean, you know, when I look at a little project that's producing power for several pieces of machinery or one building, yes. But on a large scale operation, I really hadn't seen it. I mean, I know they're out there, you know, for small geographic areas, but when you look at the sum total of what these folks envision, I've never really seen a financial model that's not going to require a lot of government oomph for it to ever come to fruition and even stay in business, much less return an ROI.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I want is for the government to get out of it, allow the sources, best sources, kind of be used, whatever they may be. I think there probably is a role in some fashion for wind and solar to some extent.
Sure.
And maybe. And if not, then so be it. The goal is simply to make sure that we have electricity for people. And that should be the number one, reliable and low cost should be top goal. That's what we should be focused on. What works, what gets us there. And, you know, the other problem with wind and solar is for them to kind of actually have any type of success. Well, I don't even know if success is the word, but you have to have all kinds of transmission lines developed. And, you know, we keep hearing about we need more transmission and more transmission, but really that's not we. I don't know who we is. What it means is wind and solar needs more transmission. So, you know, it's not just the building the wind power plants and the solar power plants. It's all the transmission lines that are a bigger issue when it comes to wind and solar than it is for the other sources.
Right, because we're burdened with all kinds of regulatory issues that the fact of the matter is if we wanted to set out to develop the transmission infrastructure that we have today, it would probably take 20, 30 years because of regulatory hurdles that you got to get over. I mean, it's the same thing with rare earth minerals. I mean, are we ever going to be able to, we have it here to sustain ourselves for the most part, but we're never going to be able to exploit that because they'll never get through the regulatory. In fact, they shut the most recent application down. So that they won't even let us mine the minerals to make the batteries for EV vehicles. And I guess we're going to go to our good buddies, China, or otherwise to get it. You know, maybe Afghanistan, because they got a lot of it there, too. You know, where are we going to head? I mean, it's just, it's just mind-numbing when you think about how we seem to put the cart before the horse a lot in this country. And great ideas moving forward, but no way to sustain itself.
Well, you know, I think it's some of these policies are maybe some wishful thinking, optics, maybe just trying to sound good. I do think that the folks realize that if they, the ones pushing wind and solar, maybe they always realize that they know that there's the problems of permitting reform and permitting and the regulatory obstacles that you're talking about. But the problem is that for those seeking reforms, what they really want is just to make it easier to push for the renewable energy sort of to get the regulatory relief for wind and solar, but not for everything. So that's right. Not permitting reform. Favoring one source of electricity, especially wind and solar, well, just any source, is not real permitting reform. That's something we need to be careful of, because we're going to hear a lot about permitting reform, I think, over the next few years. We already have. And just be careful of efforts to try to game the system so it's favoring wind and solar at the expense of other sources.
Well, that's a typical approach, right? Pick the winners and losers.
Exactly. That's exactly what they're doing.
We see it over and over again. Darren Bax, Director, Center for Energy and Environment with the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate your time and your insight. Have a great weekend.
You too. Take care.
All righty, folks, we'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. When we return, we'll visit with Laura Reese, Director, Border Security and Immigration Center at the Heritage. We'll be right back.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you, and also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
So, folks, it seems as though there's been a little history that they're trying to revise. Kamala Harris last night at her address at the Democrat National Convention said she knows cartels, she knows human trafficking, and she knows the challenges of being a border state. But yet none of that is really translated into any meaningful action taken on her part. And it's interesting that no one really challenges her to articulate what she has actually done. Here to talk to us about it is Laura Reese, Director of Border Security and Immigration at the Heritage Foundation. Laura, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Laura, I don't know if you heard what I heard last night, but I thought maybe there was an epiphany that was had that now all of a sudden Kamala Harris has figured out immigration and she's going to get tough on the border enforcement and things are going to change.
Well, they are taking gaslighting to another level. After 3.5 years of gaslighting us on the border, the fake approach she's using, as if she's not in power right now to change and fix things, is other level gaslighting. So if what she said last night were true, then today they should be changing their policies and operations and secure the border and the fentanyl coming in and the crime, stop the flow of unaccompanied children coming here. But I haven't heard of any such changes. So I don't think she's telling the truth.
You know, it's interesting, things that they perceive that are positive, right, that they've done, that they're not getting beat up on by the media. She's right there, center of that universe, being very proactive, standing side by side with Joe Biden and making decisions in that regard, leading to what they see as positive outcomes. But when it's things that are just so apparent, not going well, all of a sudden, I don't have the power as the vice president to do this. I'm the second in charge. I have to support what the president's. It's amazing how we can cozy up on the one hand and just create multiple degrees of separation on the other when it's negative.
Right. Well, they're absolute hypocrites. And clearly Joe Biden isn't in power right now and really hasn't been. So we might as well be calling this now the Harris-Biden administration. She is in effect in charge. So for her to claim, no, not me, wasn't me, I wasn't the border czar, et cetera, is running away from reality, running away from her failures, and shows that she's no leader.
So, you know, we talk about numbers a lot. I mean, you know, the realities of under the Trump administration versus this administration. I was reading several series of a lot of different articles this past week about the 515,000 unaccompanied minors here that really no one knows legally how this is ultimately going to end up and how any administration will deal with that, because typically these are things that they try to handle and deal with and locate family members, relatives, or otherwise before the fact, not after the fact, that they're already in the country meandering through our different states.
Yeah, and now that we have July numbers, we're over 521,000 unaccompanied children. And look, this was a direct policy and law that Democrats created. Senator Dianne Feinstein and Representative Zoe Lofgren, both from California, put this law in place in 2008 in a so-called must-pass trafficking victims protection reauthorization bill. And what it did was it gives in statute all sorts of immigration benefits to unaccompanied children. So what has that done? It has enticed more unaccompanied border crossings. And this administration has hit record levels. And unfortunately, because it is such a high volume of numbers, Health and Human Services loses track of them and will hand them off like a widget to anyone that can be labeled a sponsor, including other illegal aliens, sex predators, traffickers. ICE loses track of them. And so now we have hundreds of thousands of children not accounted for, and they're ending up in sex trafficking and childlike labor violations. So in no world should Kamala Harris claim that she is for the children and that we should bring in more vulnerable children only to subject them to these horrors. But then the Democrats on the back end say, well, we need to give anyone who's come in as a child a green card because they came in as a child. Yet that's how they've designed it. So it's absolutely perverse. And this part of the law needs to be repealed because it's been an abject failure at protecting children. They should be sent home to be with their families, to be safe.
Yeah, no doubt. I was reading earlier a plan from Unidos U.S., which is one of the largest Latino organizations here, and it occurred to me that a lot of what they want is just more taxpayer money to go to illegal immigrants across the border in order to provide sustenance for them, and then to provide a streamlined process to citizenship, all on the backs of the U.S. taxpayers. And You know, I mean, it's just, and when, you know, a lot of people are talking about this bipartisan Senate bill and why it failed, and I keep saying it failed because it was a bad bill. I mean, it's just, there's no other way to put it. The provisions in there were, a lot of it was duplicitous. I mean, it didn't make any sense. The silos didn't match up with the process within immigration. And it's if and though, you know, Republicans are the only ones responsible for not taking this seriously. But it's hard to make chicken salad out of the proverbial, you know what, which is what everybody was being asked to do. And the Border Patrol folks that I talked to, they supported the bill because they were getting a pay raise and they were going to get more equipment. But they didn't like the policies that were all wrapped up in there because they thought it was very disingenuous and actually was going to make their job harder. They would have much rather just enforce the laws that are on the books today. Is that what you guys are hearing?
Well, and we can't forget about the House had already done its job. It passed an excellent border security bill, H.R. 2, in May of 2023. It's been sitting on Senator Schumer's desk ever since then. But the Democrats and one Republican in the Senate put together, you're right, a very bad bill. And all it would have done is codified the very tools Biden has been using to carry out his open border operations. It would have allowed for 4,000, 5,000, up to 8,000 illegal alien encounters per day before imposing a expulsion authority. It would have codified and expanded the mass parole that Secretary Mayorkas has been using in violating the statute to bring in hundreds of thousands of inadmissible aliens. It would have codified catch and release. It would have expanded and continued asylum fraud. So it was a terrible bill, and it was rightly defeated multiple times. But the Democrats know that border security is the number one issue in this election year, and they desperately want this albatross off their necks. And so they're trying to place it on congressional Republicans and Donald Trump. You know, Donald Trump's not in power. Biden is. He can fix this. He doesn't want to.
No, not at all. And folks don't understand that we've used this executive order, executive action approach to expand these authorities. And I believe in talking to the border agents that I've talked to, they say that's what has completely bastardized this whole process. They'd much rather just enforce the laws that are on the books today. And they are completely frustrated by these complete workarounds and being commanded to ignore the law that's on the books and embrace these EAs and EOs. And it's frustrating to them because they know it's not going to work.
Right. Yeah. Enforcing the laws on the books would go 80-85% of the way in fixing what we're suffering through right now. There are still things that need to be changed in statute. The unaccompanied child law that I mentioned a few moments ago, yeah, that needs to be repealed, and ending a number of asylum fraud loopholes, as well as the Flores detention, catch and release, that needs to be overruled as well. But the agents, whether it's CBP, whether it's ICE, are completely frustrated. They're not able to do their job. They're not able to enforce the law. And that's completely, you know, their frustration is understandable. And unfortunately, it's leading in too many deaths of Americans by people who aren't supposed to be here. I would commend your audience to watch the video of Trump's visit to the border yesterday, which not only shows a good contrast between the border wall system that was put up during his administration next to the piles of construction materials left there when Joe Biden halted the wall system construction day one, and listening to the parents who have lost loved ones due to these open border policy operations under Biden, and the criminals, the gang members, just ruthless people who have come in and taken too many American lives.
So let's talk about deportation. folks are making. A lot of the immigration advocacy groups are talking about, you know, the lack of compassion relative to deportation and things of that nature. I always try to draw the distinction with how we treat citizens under our rule of law and how that accountability stream works, as opposed to this new creation that we have where we want to treat illegal immigrants in a different fashion, and the accountability stream is just completely devoid here. In fact, we want to reward them in many ways. If you would, for the benefit of the listening audience, talk about this conflict between, you know, one, the Republicans and their thought about deportations versus the Democrats.
Yeah, we need to get back to a lawful, orderly, and manageable immigration system that's manageable and orderly for everyone, for Americans, for law enforcement agents, for immigrant applicants themselves. And obtaining that requires immigration detention and deportations. We can't have unlimited immigration. No country can sustain that. We have to draw the line somewhere, which means you're going to have to deport people. That's not a criminal punishment. It is a civil consequence for being removable, whether because you crossed the border illegally, you came in on a visa and never left, or you committed a crime after we welcomed you in. And so it is a part of any country's immigration system. And the advocates who fight against deportations, some of them are conflicted. They have a conflict of interest because, you know, more people in the country gives them more power or more money, whether it's, you know, private immigration attorneys or their bar, et cetera. But Americans viscerally understand the difference between coming here legally and coming here illegally. And they want the laws upheld, and they deserve that. So our leaders' first duty is to protect Americans, protect citizenship. It is not to anyone in the world who chooses to come here and to violate our laws.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, deterrence holds true there as well in the immigration world, as it does in our criminal justice world here, for sure. Laura Reese, Director of Border Security and Immigration at the Heritage, thank you so much for joining us. Have a great weekend, and we appreciate your time and your insight.
Thanks for having me on.
All righty. We'll be right back, folks. You know, I get a lot of texts. People are confusing with exposing the facts, the unpleasant truths about certain things, as being as though I'm trying to encourage you to go vote for somebody else. I'm not. You know where I stand on that issue. I said we should put him in the rearview mirror on January 7th. That's not the issue. The issue here is, if you're going to go down this path, be aware of what it is ultimately going to happen and express yourself that this is not what you want. You may want that candidate, but you may not want that position on that policy, because it's going to have an impact on the quality of your life and the quality of life in your community. To me, that's more important than the personalities. That's more important than the parties. I'm not a party person. You know that. Said it over and over again. I've been a defrocked Republican on at least three, if not four, occasions. Many won't even come on this show because I'll call them out. I'm not afraid to call them out. I'm not afraid for the party to turn their back on me. I wasn't afraid when I was an elected official, and I'm definitely not afraid now. But we have to be honest about what is on the horizon, because it'll have an impact on your quality of life. Look at these issues hard and gain a better understanding of what it is that they're talking about. Look beyond the sound bites. I try to bring this information. Someone said, oh, man, you know, a one-sided, extremely biased side, you know, by having Laura Reese on. Really? She advocated for a fair and ordered system, a balance of interest, talking about you can't have unlimited immigration that is run amok, where people decide on a whim whether or not they want to come to this country and we have to accept them. That's not how it works. There's no government in this world that runs their immigration that way. Those that say to us that desire to do it in an ordered and structured way that we're weird, really? Then the rest of the world is weird, because that's exactly how they do it. And in fact, in a large number of countries, they're getting more and more restrictive. Because what they're finding is that short of economic credentialing, they're having a huge problem. And people are pushing back. They're not going to continue to pay. They want to keep more of their income, not less. There's nothing wrong with that position. Not at all. Everybody has worked hard to achieve and maintain the quality of life they have. Most people I know don't want to just give it away because of some whim of an elected politician that only is trying to garner more votes. And it's not really, and this is not a DNR issue, folks. For us as taxpayers, it's a preservation issue. You don't see salaries increasing, double-digit numbers. You don't see this. You don't see that. You know, it's interesting. The labor unions, they're all in, right? Lowest participation rate under this administration in a long, long, long time. These are things for a reason, right? But they'll sell you a pig and a poke. Just make your voice heard. Where you vote is of no consequence to me. I don't really care. But just understand, go in with your eyes wide open. We'll be right back. You know, I get a lot of texts. People are confusing with exposing the facts, the unpleasant truths about certain things, as being as though I'm trying to encourage you to go vote for somebody else. I'm not. You know where I stand on that issue. I said we should put him in the rearview mirror on January 7th. That's not the issue. The issue here is, if you're going to go down this path, be aware of what it is ultimately going to happen and express yourself that this is not what you want. You may want that candidate, but you may not want that position on that policy, because it's going to have an impact on the quality of your life and the quality of life in your community. To me, that's more important than the personalities. That's more important than the parties. I'm not a party person. You know that. Said it over and over again. I've been a defrock Republican on at least three, if not four, occasions. Many won't even come on this show because I'll call them out. I'm not afraid to call them out. I'm not afraid for the party to turn their back on me. I wasn't afraid when I was an elected official, and I'm definitely not afraid now. But we have to be honest about what is on the horizon, because it'll have an impact on your quality of life. Look at these issues hard and gain a better understanding of what it is that they're talking about. Look beyond the sound bites. I try to bring this information. Someone said, oh, man, you know, a one-sided, extremely biased side, you know, by having Laura Reese on. Really? She advocated for a fair and ordered system, a balance of interest, talking about you can't have unlimited immigration that is run amok, where people decide on a whim whether or not they want to come to this country and we have to accept them. That's not how it works. There's no government in this world that runs their immigration that way. Those that say to us that desire to do it in an ordered and structured way that we're weird, really? Then the rest of the world is weird, because that's exactly how they do it. And in fact, in a large number of countries, they're getting more and more restrictive. Because that what they're finding is that short of economic credentialing, they're having a huge problem. And people are pushing back. They're not going to continue to pay. They want to keep more of their income, not less. There's nothing wrong with that position. Not at all. Everybody has worked hard to achieve and maintain the quality of life they have. Most people I know don't want to just give it away because of some whim of an elected politician that only is trying to garner more votes and is not really, and this is not a DR&R issue, folks. For us as taxpayers, it's a preservation issue. You don't see salaries increasing, double digit numbers. You don't see this, you don't see that. You know, it's interesting, the labor unions, they're all in, right? Lowest participation rate under this administration in a long, long, long time. These are things for a reason, right? But they'll sell you a pig and a poke. Just make your voice heard. Where you vote is of no consequence to me. I don't really care. But just understand, go in with your eyes wide open. We'll be right back.
Want to teach your kids financial literacy, but not sure where to start? Greenlight can help. With Greenlight, parents can keep an eye on kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens use a card of their own to build money confidence. As a parent, you can send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and more. It's a convenient way to run your household, customized to your family's needs, and the easy way to raise financially smart kids. Get started with Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at newbalance.com.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at tmobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.